Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is Jack Benny talking.
Jordan, Rocky Jordan.
Have you ever danced with a murderer?
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. King County.
A radio retrospective this week looks at the historic War of the Worlds broadcast. Katie Sewell, producer of the show, what was that?
Well, on October 30th, 1938, Mercury Theater on the Air did an adaptation of H.G. Wells' story, War of the Worlds, that sent people in a panic running through the streets. So I thought it would be fun to ask the question, what, were people just that gullible? You know, what was going on there?
Well, what was going on?
Well, okay, well, War of the Worlds is well known because of that panic, right? People ran out of their homes with damp towels over their faces, and they were worried about poison gases, and they loaded family into cars, and they put furniture on top of the cars and drove away, all these things. Lionel Barrymore released his horses into the wild so that they could fend for themselves. And I was reading a New York Times article that was printed the following day after this panic that recounted a man in Pittsburgh who, quote, returned home in the midst of the broadcast and found his wife in the bathroom with a bottle of poison in her hand screaming, "I'd rather die this way than that." So anyway, so how did all of this grow out of a very simple broadcast? Let's listen to how the show starts. After the announcer says, this is a production of H.G. Wells' story, War of the Worlds, Orson Welles uses this opening monologue.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied.
See, it sounds like a script, right? It's very straight,
well, and
play-like.
It starts with the announcer saying, this is a production of the H.G. Wells story, War of the Worlds.
Right.
And then Orson Welles starts talking.
Yeah, and he talks for a lot longer than that. That was just a clip. But he finishes his opening monologue by setting the scene of we're going into the play now, right? He sets the scene by saying, on that night of the otherworldly invasion, 32 million people were listening to their radios. And then the opening scene begins like this.
Hours, not much change in temperature. A slight atmospheric disturbance of undetermined origin is reported over Nova Scotia, causing a low-pressure area to move down rather rapidly over the northeastern states, bringing a forecast of rain accompanied by winds of light gale force. Maximum temperature 66, minimum 48. This weather report comes to you from the Government Weather Bureau. We take you now to the Meridian Room in the Hotel Park Plaza in downtown New York, where you will be entertained by the music of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra.
Okay, Raymond Raquello and his orchestra, always a favorite thing to talk about. So where does the panic come from? Well, the music keeps getting interrupted by news bulletins like this one.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity.
So then what happens later on in the show is an object actually...
How much later on? Just a few minutes, right?
Well, they build it pretty slowly over time, actually. So maybe 15 minutes in.
The music is... They go back to...
Well, they keep coming... They do an interview with a scientist. They go back to the music. This, you know, so they're building it very slowly. And then eventually an object actually crashes into Earth. And the radio audience goes along with the news reporter out to the field. And this is what they hear.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but do you hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer. Here. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Professor Pearson.
Yes, Mr. Brooks.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing?
Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface.
I say, do you still think it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what to think.
I mean, I could tell that's Orson Welles.
I know. So if you're listening closely, which, you know, according to news reports, people weren't, they could have heard that was Orson Welles. But the other question is, does that announcer sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He sounded very familiar to the people listening. He sounded like this guy.
The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather, riding as though it was mighty, mighty proud of a place it's playing in the world's aviation.
So that's newscaster Herbert Morrison, who only a year earlier famously reported from the field during the Hindenburg disaster.
Which we heard.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. And so the actor who played the newscaster in War of the Worlds, Frank Reddick, used the recording of the Hindenburg disaster as his inspiration on how to play the role. So when he said this...
The top flew out there! Stand back!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed.
It vividly reminded the audience of hearing this.
It's rising terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world.
So that was a traumatic thing that people had heard on the radio. And so him sounding so much like that almost, like, gave that gut impulse that this is something terrible. Something awful has happened here.
Also, proof again that most of us listen to the radio sort of as background. We come in, we come out of it.
Right.
What's going on? Oh, we go away.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it sounds authentic enough and it hits that nerve of something that disturbed you before, oh, you know, there you go. So another reason for the panic, it wasn't just the newscaster's similarities. Everybody listening was already on edge. It was 1938, and the world was on the brink of World War II. In an FCC survey in 1938, they found that one-tenth of time spent listening to the radio was spent listening to news. So they were tuning in, and they were tuning in nervously to try to find out what was going on. So the reporting segments in War of the Worlds sounded a whole lot like what they had heard on the radio when radio was covering the Munich crisis, which had happened 1 month earlier from September 12th to the 30th in 1938. And that meeting of the European leaders became the prelude to World War II. And many radio historians actually credit the news coverage of that event, the Munich crisis, as the turning point for radio becoming a trusted source for media.
Oh, is that right? They were there. They were on the scene, Murrow and William Shire and those other guys, so they were reporting on it.
And they did a really good job. In fact, a lot of people thought that they did a better job than the newspapers were doing at the time. So in some ways, it's not surprising that listeners who are only half paying attention to War of the Worlds, they hear about things falling to earth and they just assume, without any deeper thought, that it must be Hitler. Third major factor that led to the panic was that thousands of listeners missed the beginning of the show. They missed the announcement that it was an adaptation of H.G. Wells' story because they were listening to this.
And I heard footsteps on the ceiling. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Maybe you had a snootful.
No, no.
I was only trying to help.
Well, please don't.
All right.
Oh, so they were listening to other shows.
Edgar Bergen and his puppet, Charlie McCarthy, they were playing opposite War of the Worlds. And at that time, they were incredibly popular. Like, looking at the rating shares, this ventriloquist puppet held 34.7%, and the Mercury Theater only had 3.6. I mean, it was like, it was a monster compared to Mercury Theater on the air.
Yes, my favorite thing being ventriloquism on the radio.
On the radio, I know, it worked, believe it or not. But then, when an unknown singer took the stage...
Look at you and look at me, just two worlds apart.
A whole lot of radio listeners tuned away to see what else was on. They didn't care, and they found themselves smack dab in the middle of a fake breaking news story on Orson's show. Some people actually think that the panic wasn't as big as it could have been, because in reality, most people stayed listening to Charlie McCarthy. It was like that small percentage of people who surfed on to find something else.
All right, but one other question about that, though. Didn't they, the show is following the conventions. Did they not follow the conventions of, we're listening to the War of Worlds adaptation, we'll be back in 1 minute, and things like that?
Not really. I mean, a lot of dramas, when you listen to them back at that time, they didn't do that so much. They didn't do a lot of recapping. They did do one recap.
Well, they would take commercial
breaks. They did do
breaks.
One recap, but people also missed that one because of the time that they were tuning in, yeah. So another question to ask is, was the national panic as bad as it's remembered to be? Because we think it must have, everybody was running and panic-stricken. But some radio historians, news historians, actually don't think so. They think that the newspaper was playing the hysteria up because they were trying to make a mockery of the radio medium. You know, remember that I said earlier that newspapers were feeling threatened because, one, radio was a new startup, and what was this thing that was competing with them? And two, they had covered the Munich crisis better from most people's point of view. So they had a point to prove. And the proof was this was hugely irresponsible. People could have died. Radio can't be trusted.
This is their YouTube video.
Right. And so a lot of people think that they kept it in the papers for so long and found all these little stories from people's experiences just to keep it going, to like discredit radio as a good and trustable medium.
Well, Orson Welles had to appear before a committee, didn't he? Congressional committee at one point, I thought.
I believe so.
Yeah, he had to speak about it.
Despite all this, even so, when you go historically forward, because of War of the Worlds, a lot of people did not believe this was true when they heard this on the radio.
7-yard line. Wilbur Kennard made the tackle. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Stay tuned to WOR for further development.
People heard that and didn't believe it the first time?
A lot of people did. I didn't believe it because radio wasn't to be trusted. You know?
This is another hoax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but of course, that proved to be true.
Could we do that? I mean, could we? I mentioned the YouTube videos and all the confusion that arose out of those. Could there be, with television, I don't think television has ever done anything of that kind of
television
quality.
Actually did do a War of the Worlds adaptation.
But they haven't had that kind of successful hoax.
Well, there were reports, actually, when they did that. I remember it was like in the early 90s that some people actually did believe the TV, too. Maybe there's just a certain percentage.
They followed it
that are
the
very
same
gullible.
Way.
You know, another interesting thing I didn't bring up was that you always think of Orson Welles as really thinking this through, that this was a great mastermind idea of how he was going to, you know, really build tension and cause people to panic. And the reality of it was he barely even worked on the script leading up to it. And he didn't show up to even rehearse it until very shortly before it went on the air. It was written by a different man whose name I'm forgetting right now, but I'm going to do a show on him someday because he also worked on Citizen Kane. And he was the one that did the adaptation, and Orson was just sort of, he ended up taking credit for it, but he wasn't the one that was had his hands in the whole mastery of it.
Well, you do have a lot of people who say the panic was overstated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do find that now, but you did also find more than a few people who
The newspapers were able to find some good stories. A relative actually told me that it wasn't that they were listening to the broadcast, but the neighbors ran over and pounded on the door and said, "The world is coming to an end. Run, run, everyone run." So there was always that sect of people that want to stir up a panic, spread the news on.
All right, Katie, thank you.
Yep.